What happens when you feed an advanced machine learning algorithm 284 complex economic variables and just ask it to resolve a highly controversial decades-old econometric debate?
Well, it basically grinds through the data, runs millions of calculations, and spits out the exact same 8 control variables that human researchers chose by pure intuition 25 years ago.
It's honestly incredible. And welcome to today's Deep Dive. Our mission today is highly methodological. So if you're listening, consider this a sort of academic study guide.
Right. Specifically tailored for economics grad students who are trying to wrangle with the mechanics of high-dimensional causal inference.
Exactly. We're walking through a really rigorous pedagogical replication from Fitzgerald and co-authors published in 2026. And it meticulously breaks down the double lasso procedure.
Yeah. And to demonstrate the empirical machinery here, they use a specific data set that really needs some context. The data comes from Donahue and Levitt's famous, or maybe infamous, 2001 paper.
Right. The one investigating whether the legalization of abortion in the 1970s caused a decline in crime rates in the 1990s. And before we go any further, we need to be explicitly clear about something.
Extremely clear.
We are not taking any sides on this politically charged topic. We're not endorsing the substantive claims of that original paper, nor are we, you know, trying to settle the debate. We are impartially analyzing the empirical machinery here.
Exactly. We are treating this strictly as a mathematical case study. The focus is entirely on the structural properties of the estimator in high dimensions. So to set the scene, the underlying data structure is a panel of 48 U.S. states over 12 years.
Right. And they've first differenced the data to absorb state-fixed effects. So that leaves us with a sample size, RN, of 576 observations.
Which is pretty standard. But the core methodological problem here comes from the controls. Donahue and Levitt handpicked just 8 covariates originally. But this 2026 replication asks, well, what if we let the data choose from a massive library of 284 candidate covariates?
Right. I mean, we're talking squares, two-way interactions, lag variables, all the usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
So RP, the number of parameters, is 284.
Putting us squarely in that Nightingale's a small, Piner is a large regime. Which is exactly where classical regression techniques just completely fall apart.
Yeah, let's actually trace that structural failure mathematically. So if we start with the baseline scenario, just first difference OLS. We regress differenced crime on differenced abortion with zero controls.
Right, just the raw baseline.
And the result for the violent crime coefficient, our alpha, is negative 0.152.
Meaning a 1 unit increase in the differenced abortion rate correlates to a 0.152 unit decrease in violent crime. That's our unconditioned target.
Okay, but here's the natural grad student critique, right? Omitted variable bias. If 8 controls aren't enough to isolate the causal effect, why not just run a kitchen sink OLS? Like, throw all 284 variables in and let the matrix algebra sort it out.
It's tempting. But when you actually try that 284 predictors with only 576 observations, the classical estimator just breaks down.
Because of the collinearity in the design matrix?
Exactly. You have variables that are practically clones. Like various interactions of income and demographic lags. Technically, the 6-all matrix is invertible, so Stata or R will try to run it.
But the columns are so correlated that they don't have any independent variation.
Right. So the algorithm struggles. The smallest eigenvalues of that matrix get infinitely close to zero. And what happens when you invert a matrix with near zero eigenvalues?
The inverse blows up. Basically dividing by zero.
Exactly. The output becomes total numerical garbage. If you force full OLS here, the violent crime estimate completely flips sign to positive 0.0135.
Wow. And the instability is even worse for the murder estimate, right? I think it balloons to positive 2.34.
Which, if you interpreted that literally, means a 1 unit increase in the treatment raises murder by 234%.
Which is, I mean, obviously not a causal reality. It's just a numerical artifact. We don't have the degrees of freedom to estimate 284 meaningful slopes.
Right. So we need a budget. We need a mechanism that forces the model to drop redundant variables entirely. And that points us straight to lasso.
Least absolute shrinkage and selection operator, which is fundamentally just OLS with an L1 penalty attached.
Yes. And that L1 penalty is the magic here. Contrast it with ridge regression, which uses an L2 penalty, squaring the coefficients. Ridge shrinks things smoothly towards zero, but rarely hits exactly zero.
Right, whereas lasso takes the absolute value. And if you visualize a geometry of that, the absolute value constraint creates these sharp corners in the parameter space.
Exactly. The sharp corners are key. When the algorithm optimizes, it bumps into those corners, which literally forces a bunch of coefficients to become exactly zero.
So it's true variable selection, not just shrinkage. And the severity is controlled by that lambda penalty parameter.
Right. Lambda is basically the volume knob on selection. Turn it up, and only the loudest signals get through. If a variable isn't predictive enough to beat that threshold, its coefficient gets crushed to zero.
Okay, so logically, if we want to estimate a causal effect, the first intuitive step, what they call post-structural lasso, or PSL, would be to just run a lasso, predicting our outcome from the massive control matrix.
Right, but you have to protect your treatment variable. You force the treatment into the model by giving it a penalty weight of zero, so it can't be dropped.
Right, so you guarantee the treatment is in, and let the L1 penalty pick the best supporting cast from the other 284 variables. And honestly, PSL seems to work great at first.
It does look appealing.
Yeah. For violent crime, the algorithm drops 281 variables. It picks just three controls. You run a standard OLS on those, and you get an alpha of negative 0.157, which is super close to our baseline of negative 0.152.
It's mathematically stable, sure. But, and this is a massive but, for causal inference, relying on PSL introduces a fatal flaw. You really have to think about what lasso is optimizing for here.
It's optimizing for predicting the outcome.
Exactly. A single lasso procedure only cares about what efficiently predicts the outcome variable dollars. But basic econometrics tells us omitted variable bias isn't just about outcome predictors.
Right. A confounder has to be correlated with the outcome and the treatment.
Yes. So imagine you have a control variable that strongly predicts the treatment, but only weakly predicts the outcome.
Oh, I see. Because it weakly predicts the outcome, PSL's penalty just crushes it to zero.
Exactly. PSL drops it. But dropping it means you just left a major confounder sitting in the error term. By only looking at the outcome, PSL fails to isolate exogenous variation in the treatment.
So we basically algorithmically discarded the variables that explain treatment assignment. That's a huge blind spot.
It is. And to fix it, we have to catch confounders from both directions. Which brings us to the actual double lasso procedure.
Okay. Grab your notebooks, folks. How do we implement this?
It's deeply connected to the Frischois-Lovell theorem. We need to partial out the covariates from both the outcome and the treatment. So, step one, run a lasso predicting the outcome from the 284 controls. Record the indices of the variables that survive. Call that set.
Got it.
Step two, completely separate. Run a second lasso predicting the treatment variable dollars from the 284 controls. Record those indices. Call that set I dollar.
Okay, and step three.
You take the union of those two sets, I guy, I dollar.
It's like having two independent quality inspectors on an assembly line. One is just looking for outcome predictors. The other is just looking for treatment predictors. And you keep whatever, either of them flags.
That's a perfect analogy. Taking that union gives you the covariates you need to approximate that Frischois-level projection in high dimensions. But, and this is where grad students always mess up, you cannot use the lasso coefficients for your final estimate.
Right, because of regularization bias. The L1 penalty shrinks everything towards zero, even the variables it keeps.
Exactly. If you use those penalized coefficients, you bake in a bias that's order of probability lambda over nollars, it scales with your penalty. With only 576 observations, that bias artificially suppresses the true treatment effect.
So to fix that, we run a post-OLS step, we throw out the shrunken coefficients entirely, we just take our treatment, our outcome, and the unpenalized union of the controls, and run a standard OLS regression.
Yes. The lasso is just the casting director deciding who gets to be in the movie.
And post-OLS is the camera actually recording what they do.
Beautifully put. And when you apply double lasso to the crime data, the mechanics are just so revealing. Step one, predicting the crime outcome. Lasso selected zero controls.
Wait, really? Zero?
Zero. Under the penalty threshold, crime was basically unpredictable from the matrix. But step two, predicting the abortion treatment, it selected exactly eight controls.
So the union is just those eight variables. You run post-OLS, and the final estimate is negative 0.0964. But the crazy part is what those eight variables actually were.
Right. The algorithm algorithmically rediscovered lagged prisoners per capita, lagged income, and lagged unemployment.
The exact variables the original authors handpicked in 2001. High-dimensional econometrics, literally just validating traditional economic intuition. But, and this is a big caveat, this all hinges on one massive tuning decision, lambda.
Oh, absolutely. The penalty rule is everything. If you tune lambda wrong, you destroy the causal estimate.
Right, because in machine learning, everyone just defaults to cross-validation, right? CV.
Right, data-driven. You partition the data and let the algorithm find the lambda that minimizes out-of-sample prediction MSE. But this paper pushes for the rigorous penalty instead.
Based on Bologna and co-authors from around 2012, right?
Right.
Which is theory-based, not data-driven.
Exactly. It uses a Bonferroni-style formula to keep the false positive rate of selection asymptotically small. It factors in meta fries and a pilot estimate of the residual variance to set a very rigid threshold.
It's like having two thermostats. One is set by an engineer for system stability, that's the rigorous penalty. The other is a smart algorithm chasing the minimum heating bill, which is CV. But why is CV so bad for causal inference here?
Because CV optimizes for forecasting. It wants to minimize prediction error, so it holds on to a ton of marginally predictive noise.
Right, it overselects.
Massively. For violent crime, if you use CV, it keeps 143 controls just in the treatment equation. The union balloons to 150 variables.
So we basically drift right back into the kitchen sink problem.
Exactly. Those 150 variables soak up all the usable variation in the treatment, the model gets saturated, and the causal signal is completely lost.
And the empirical results show that, right? If you run double lasso with the CV penalty, the violent crime coefficient flips to positive 0.019. The murder estimate hits an insane negative 1.11.
Completely implausible. The lesson here is that for causal inference, you have to purposefully underselect relative to what a pure prediction model would do. The rigorous penalty limits selection error to protect the final estimation error.
Okay, so once we have our unbiased point estimate locked in with a rigorous penalty, we still have to get the standard errors right. And since we're dealing with panel data, 12 years of differences across 48 states, we can't just assume ID errors.
Definitely not. You have massive autocorrelation within states. A policy change or economic shock in a state affects multiple consecutive years.
Right. Treating 576 observations as independent is like treating 48 families of siblings as 576 completely unrelated strangers. Your confidence intervals will be way too narrow.
Which is why the procedure uses the HC1 finite sample adjusted cluster robust estimator.
The classic sandwich variance matrix.
Yep. The bread is the inverse of the Sexsmith matrix, and the meat in the middle does the clustering adjustment. You sum the scores within each specific cluster, each state, before computing the outer product.
And there's a degrees of freedom correction too, right?
Yeah.
Over dollar minus one.
Exactly. Where dollars is the total number of clusters.
Yeah.
Here dollars is $48, which is safely above the econometric rule of thumb of 30.
Right. And that clustering correction inflates the standard errors by about 40% compared to a naive model.
Which is necessary to keep your hypothesis tests valid. But, you know, we should really emphasize the caveats here. Double lasso is powerful, but it doesn't invent variation out of thin air.
Right. It's a tool for tractability, not a magic wand for bad data.
Exactly. It saves you from the bias of handpicking covariates, but if the true confounder is completely missing from your 284 candidate variables, you still have omitted variable bias.
Identification still requires conditional independence. The backdoor paths have to actually be closable with the data you have. And since this is fundamentally a diff and diff setup, parallel trends still has to hold.
Yes. Empirically, double lasso shines brightest in an asymmetric regime. When your treatment is highly predictable by the controls, but your outcome isn't. That's where the dual selection prevents the disaster that single lasso causes.
Yeah. And applying prediction-optimized defaults like CV to causal questions without understanding the matrix algebra can literally flip the sign of your findings. You really have to understand why we penalize and how we tune.
Absolutely.
Which leaves us with a pretty fun philosophical question for you to ponder. We just dissected this highly complex theory-driven machine learning process. L1 penalties, dual selection, rigorous Bonferroni bounds.
All to sift through a massive high-dimensional landscape.
Right. And the result? It settled on the exact same handful of economic controls that human researchers figured out using pure intuition a quarter century ago. So does high-dimensional econometrics actually replace traditional economic theory? Or is its greatest triumph simply proving mathematically that human intuition was right all along?
That is the million-dollar question.
Keep analyzing the methodology, keep questioning the defaults, and we will see you on the next deep dive.